Curtain with Nick Troon, the show where we sit down with theatre practitioners and get a backstage look at the creative process. On today's episode, we sit down with the leads from Soundwork Productions' 2024 season of Parade, Aaron Roebuck and Montana Sharp. Parade has recently completed a run in Melbourne and will be playing in Sydney this weekend. We'll be talking about this change in scenery, the show itself, and performance in a capital city. So, let's get on with the show and peep behind the curtain. Welcome to Behind the Curtain with Nick Troon. My name is Nick, I'm your host, and today I'm sitting down with Aaron Roebuck and Montana Sharp from Soundwork Productions' 2024 season of Parade. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Hey.
Now, before we jump into Parade, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves?
Montana, you can go first.
Oh, okay. Hi, I'm Montana, born and bred in Melbourne. I work as a singer, songwriter, a session musician, and musical theatre performer. So I do a lot of session work in studios for other people's like backing vocals and stuff with Netflix. And I'm also a member of a national touring band called Echoes of Pink Floyd.
My name is Aaron. Do not adjust your headphones. I am from the United States of America, so I apologize for talking at you in my way. I moved to Australia about 20 years ago, actually, so I have dual citizenship, but this accent just won't leave. It does come in handy, though, sometimes. Anyway, yeah, I'm a music theater actor, cabaret person, between, like, sort of gigging work, events work, and stage musicals and plays. I sort of follow the work and do what will have me. And then I also work as a cantor as well in a synagogue in the North Shore of Sydney.
Very nice. Let's talk a bit about Parade. So despite being performed since 1998, Parade is a bit of a lesser known musical. For our listeners who are unaware, what is Parade all about?
I'll let you take this.
Okay, I'll go first this time then. It opened, as you say, in the late 90s for its first production. But actually, last year, it was revived on Broadway as well. It was obviously like when things are revived, it has a different energy to it. But it was sort of reintroduced in the States, at least. And it won the best revival. But yeah, it's the first time in a long time that, or the first time ever that people in Australia have seen it on a main stage. The show is set around 1913 in Atlanta, Georgia, in the southern part of the States. And it basically follows the story of one of the biggest judicial events of the early 1900s, which was the trial of Leo Frank, where Leo is accused and eventually convicted of a murder of a 13-year-old girl who worked for him at a pencil factory. And the show, I guess, explores whether that did actually happen. There's an ambiguity around, we don't obviously see that murder on stage, God forbid. But there's a sense of how the community targets certain people when it comes to, I guess, their own beliefs or their own trauma that they're dealing with. And the way that the different community groups are targeted, and the way in which Leo's wife, Lucille, sticks up for her husband and tries to find the truth. And that whole storyline is kind of where it ends up. It's about 2 years, the whole musical, in between him getting convicted and the end.
This musical is based on true events. So the process of finding your character is going to be slightly different from your traditional fictitious musical. What have been your processes in finding your characters?
Yeah, I mean, I just did a lot of general research on her as much as possible. She wrote a lot of letters. She published an article. And then once we entered the rehearsal space, kind of made a conscious decision to leave all that at the door and trust that all of that was in there. Mm-hmm. Because it is based on true people, but these are still characters in a musical. So it's kind of marrying the musical elements with the real-life person. I don't want to do like a caricature of the real Seal Frank.
And sometimes there are more interesting choices to make with the particular way that they've written this structure of the script, that they've taken liberties on certain things. On paper with Leo, it's an easy choice to sort of play him as the victim in all this. Whereas I try to sort of explore the balance of good and evil within him, I suppose, in that in the script particularly, it's written that he's quite an irritable person. He's not happy with the people that he is surrounded by. He's not particularly happy in his marriage. There's that sense of like he's very much not the hero of the story. But then at the same time, the audience sort of have to be on his side, otherwise the show won't really work. So there's that sense of like taking the true story and obviously wanting to put your mark on that, but then like serving a story that's going to be theatrically sound. Yeah.
And did you find in that sort of research process, did you find that there were any other performances of the characters that you particularly spoke with?
We've listened to a lot of them.
Yeah.
I tend not to watch or listen too much to other people. To be honest, there's the one moment in the courtroom scene that's like a 45-minute section of Act One where I always think of this photo of the original Leo Frank. Mm. And he's sitting there with his legs crossed and his like head is tilted to the side. And he has this sort of like, I always say kind of bored look on his face. You know, as people are, you know, yelling at him and the other lawyers saying, all that sort of thing. He's just that energy. I always picture him as my reference point, the original black and white photo, more than, I guess, another performance.
Yeah, yeah, I'm the same. I think more about what the real Lucille Frank would have been feeling in the moment rather than the performances I saw on YouTube, which were wonderful.
Completely legal as well.
Of course.
This show details a trial from the early 1900s, but as you said, it's having a bit of a resurgence with a Broadway revival only last year. Why do you believe it's so important that a story from over 100 years ago be told today?
I think even though it was 100 years ago, unfortunately, racism and bigotry are always going to be part of society to some degree, sometimes more than others. So I think it is kind of a timeless message that is never going to go away and we have to keep learning.
There's actually quite a beautiful technique used in the show that the beginning, it's set post-Civil War after the end of the 1800s in the States. The first image of the show is a soldier from the Civil War and then we see time pass and then he's old at the time of the actual show. And then the end of the show, which is now leading to the end of the 1910s, we're now in the world of going into World War One.
Of course.
So there's a sense of history repeating itself and the way in which trauma through things like war and families being separated and people going off to war, all that sort of thing then makes people unstable, really, I think. You know, there's a sense of trauma that if it's not dealt with, it ends up circulating again. And then by the time they get to, you know, World War II, then there'll be another moment. And so there's a sense of like history repeating itself that I think is actually in the show, like it bookends the show. And so I think that people will end up not seeing this as so much a piece of history, but as something they go, oh, this actually has continued and then impacts us today. And as Montana says, like the core issues of which this tragedy happens is something that is happening and will continue to happen.
In addition to the generational gap, the events of this musical take place in the US. What impact do you believe this story has on Australian audiences?
That's a good question. I think if theater is really good, like if art is good, it should transcend those things just generally. In our show, there's always that thing about the fourth wall, which is like a theater thing about the audience don't exist here. There's a wall that we're all looking at. There are a few times in the show that, not like it goes down. I mean, definitely in the courtroom scene, the audience are seen as the jury. There's a sense of pleading that happens between like Leo particularly and the jury in terms of trying to connect with the people that in reality in the jury in Atlanta were like, don't look at me. I don't care about you. I think that the show is fine to really connect with the audience in the theater, in the score. There are very deliberate moments where the audience are like not sure whether they should clap or not. You know, it's supposed to, I guess, make people uncomfortable in the way. Usually when you watch a show and you don't know whether to clap, it's like they've messed up the last note or something. Exactly. It's not that. It's more like you should go, oh, wait, am I applauding this character that's doing something I don't believe in? Or it's supposed to make people question and then they're put in the jury position. And they're like, ooh, you know, so I feel like there's that sense of this show is like making these people in the audience, it's challenging them and making them go, okay, what? How do I feel about this? More than, I guess, an imported show where even if it's about something that's very relevant or Australian, there's a sense of just watching it, you know? So I think that that's probably the way in which it connects to them.
It's just a human element. It's beyond sort of country or race or anything like that.
Or time. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Over the last few months, you've been rehearsing and completed a previous run of the show in Melbourne. Have there been any challenges moving the show from Melbourne to Sydney? I understand that you haven't started your run yet, but have you found anything so far?
I think it's more just making it bigger and better. I guess now we like know the kinks we want to iron out and making it an even better show than it already was.
Yeah, they've added creatively that there's so many more creative, bigger elements just because when you don't have to kind of build it from the ground up so much, you have space to then go, oh, this is now the core of this. So let's make it a big moment or make this bit, you know, more dynamic. Yeah. I mean, it's been crazy. We say, you know, we've rehearsed for months. We rehearsed for a week. but look, it's good. Yeah. So we're in full-time 2-week rehearsals in Melbourne at the moment. About half the cast did it last year. So obviously there's like a muscle memory that kind of comes back to you. I do feel for the half the cast that are learning it.
They're amazing.
They're so good. Oh my God. They've really learned it and like they're going to be amazing. And you're not going to know who did it before and who did it new.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But with that comes a whole other energy that I feel like this particular production is it's going to be fresh for everyone because there are all these new energies, new elements that, yeah, it's going to keep it really cool.
And so how you were saying that this production has been done before and you're moving it into the new space, are you using many of the same costume and prop and set elements?
Apparently the costumes are about 60% the same.
Okay.
There's a bit of an elevation in that regard.
I get a jacket.
You get a jacket. Well done. She's a classy lady now. It's colder. It was at Chapel of Chapel in Melbourne, which is quite a restrictive space in terms of backstage areas. There isn't. It's a live music venue more than a theater, really, when it comes to backstage space. And it's also a very, not so deep, but very wide. So it has a different sort of shape than a traditional space. So now that I think we have a bit more, I guess, mechanical things at our disposal, we have fly towers and we can have more of a moving set instead of a sort of static thing. There's just more opportunity. And I think, yeah, that's what's kind of lifting the bar a bit, which is really exciting.
Continuing on from that comparison, Melbourne and Sydney both offer very different styles of art scene. I know you've yet to start your run in Sydney, but have you noticed any differences between the two markets?
Well, how would you define the Melbourne art scene?
Oh, Melbourne's pretty earthy, I would say. I mean, I spend more time on like live music, like gigging scene, and people are very chill, grungy, authentic.
I've always found I'm from Sydney myself, and in terms of the theater, there's a sense of the theaters, like the big theaters. They're quite separate in Sydney, whereas in Melbourne, like you have theaters right across the road from each other. So there's that sense of, I don't know, I don't want to make any big calls about Sydney versus Melbourne because it's a hot topic.
I do. I want to get in.
There's a hot topic. Oh my God. Everyone's like, oh, it's a grid. It's a grid. It's so much better. No, I'm not going to make any big calls on it. But there is a sense of like with the Seymour Center, for example, where we're headed. It's an amazing like building and it's got three theaters within it and a live music venue. So there's that sense of, I think what Sydney wants and needs, which Seymour Centre actually does, is that sort of like hub, the hub of theater. Whereas like, you know, in Sydney, you go to like the Star and you go to the Lyric and you go to the Sydney, you go to the Capitol and then there's like this state theater. And I think that it's harder to like access and go, oh, I'm going to one show. Ooh, that's a really exciting thing across the road. You know, there's not that sense of it. Whereas the Seymour Center, I'm so excited to be in that theater for a week because we're going to be in there and we're going to be like, oh, there's going to be an actors walking around there in the theater downstairs. You know, there's a sense of that, which I'm really excited for. And I encourage people to come to the Seymour Center, see our show, but then check out what else is happening. You know, I hope that there's that sort of cross-pollinization within that building, which I think will be what Sydney needs, you know?
It's almost a sense of connectivity and community almost.
And look, it's at the University of Sydney. So there's that sense of hustle and bustle around there anyway. So I hope having shows like this and constant movement, I think will be really good for that sense of community.
Being in a capital city, there is a very saturated market when it comes to musical theatre. How do you think this competition both helps and hinders your ability to attract audiences?
That's always hard. Thankfully, it's not our job. I love publicists and marketing teams. But look, I had an interview the other week and I had just seen Chicago that's in town in Melbourne at the moment. And it was funny because like Chicago and Parade actually have a few similarities when it comes to the time period. Some of the music, like that sort of ragtimey jazz thing is referenced to in this. And the whole courtroom, like drama sort of vibe too. But it was also interesting seeing the differences too, because like there's so much razzle dazzle, so to speak, about the big shows with, you know, moving things and a huge proscenium and a balcony and all that sort of thing. And I think that people probably go to those shows for that.
Spectacle.
Yeah, spectacle. And there's less risk. You know, you go, oh, this show is tried and tested. I've seen it. I've seen the movie. You know, I know what I'm getting into, which, yeah, there is a risk of people not putting their money in and putting their night to go see something that they're not sure about yet. But yeah, I have faith that people go to the theater for maybe more than that. Some people, actually, I know a lot of people that go, oh, I've seen that show, so I've ticked that one. You know, I've seen that show 10 years ago, or I've seen that movie, and so I want to, like, expand my knowledge. And we're hoping that those people come along. It's the same with music, you know, making people, like, try out something new is tricky sometimes.
Yeah, but I feel like just like the music community, the music theater community, like, the more, the better. And also, our show is the saddest, so it stands out.
It's the saddest, and we'll cry extra hard, you know.
So there you go. If you're looking for something with a bit of drama, then Parade's the one to come to.
Oh, God. Someone said to me the other day, they're like, I was in an interview, and they're like, this sounds like a very serious show. And I was like, yeah, but it's also really fun. It is fun. It actually is fun. There are fun bits.
Moving away from the musical, let's talk about you. So you've both come into this production with musical backgrounds. Aaron, you've been a graduate from the Australian Institute of Music, and Montana, being a published musician and a music tutor. How do you believe this training enhances your final performance?
Obviously, it helps with the technical aspects of it, like vocally wise, and also like with a musical that's musically rich as a Jason Robert Brecon musical. Like, it is very musically complex. And then I would say it probably hasn't helped at all, and there are just things I had to learn from diving in, which is why it's been probably the most rewarding process for me. So yeah, old dogs learn new tricks.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I've done a fair few musicals, so I feel like the process in approaching like a script is always going to be similar, but there's something about when you do something that is quite connected to your personal experience that doesn't happen that often. I mean, you get cast in things that you suit, but that's usually like your look or your vibe or your performance style rather than who you are as a person. I mean, casting directors are often especially good if they like catch that and they go, oh, that's an authentic portrayal. And I don't quite know why, but it must be something deep inside your cerebral. But it also makes it a bit tricky, you know, like if you're not used to that, like this is the first time probably that it's quite close to home. And so there's that sense of vulnerability that, yeah, you're not actually quite prepared for. You can't learn that at university, you know what I mean? So there's that sense that has been challenging, but
cathartic, though.
Yeah, cathartic. Yeah, yeah, totally. It's necessary. And I know that it's how it should be done. I'm grateful for that opportunity rather than it being daunting.
A space to tell your authentic self. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You don't often get that moment in the spotlight to do that. You can have your moment in your personal life, but to share it on this scale is a unique chance.
As we've established, you're both coming into this production with a wealth of experience. What do you believe to be the most important step in your career so far?
Forgetting all of the experience and just focusing on this one.
Yeah.
It's about dropping all the preconceived ideas of what you should know and should be doing and how it should be. Yeah.
And I would say, I guess if I go into like advice, I suppose what I would say, considering what we're going into, is like, listen to everyone, listen to everything. If you're not like in charge of the whole thing, if you're what I like to say, a cog in the machine, which we all are, there's that sense of like knowing that everyone in this room, in that room over there, in the other room that we're in right now, they're all like so valuable, and we're all here for like a very specific reason. You know, people like hire people for very specific reasons. And sometimes we forget that we're part of that puzzle piece and we go, oh no, I have to actually bear all the weight and I have to like do everyone's job at the same time. But when I started just like listening to everyone and letting that influence what I do, that's when you reach the best version of what you're doing.
That perfectly segues into my final question. For anyone looking to break into the capital city theater scene, what would be your top piece of advice?
Yeah, mine would be that. Just listen and stay humble because everyone deserves their time. And they deserve your time as well.
Montana?
I would say, one, don't count yourself out because of what type of performer you think you are. And then I would say, like, there are so many other ways to make yourself known rather than just auditions in this digital age. And I think that's, well, I mean, it's unfortunate or it's fortunate, but it's equally worth
Now, before we close, do you want to give a quick promo for the show?
Well, we are opening Parade the Musical at the Seymour Center from May the 9th. And you can book tickets at the Seymour Center website or just Google Parade Musical Sydney and it should show up. Tickets are selling fast, so please get onto it. As I said, we want to have as many people in the room to give the story to. Mm. And we're so excited to fly up. I keep messing up. I'm going to fly up to Sydney this weekend. And then in just like a week's time, we'll have an audience there. So come join in.
And you have to see my cool new jacket.
Oh, the jacket. No one's seen it yet.
The star of the show.
Exclusive.
Exclusive.
All right. Well, thank you for coming and taking the time to sit down with me.
Pleasure. Thanks so much for having us.
You've been listening to Behind the Curtain with Nick Troon, recorded in TuneFM Studios at the University of New England on Anawan Country. To view the latest episodes and TuneFM's other programs, visit tunefm.net or search TuneFM on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Finally, make sure you're following TuneFM on Facebook and Instagram for the latest updates on new episodes. That's it for today's episode. My name's been Nick, and I'll see you next time.